Hello, welcome back to the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. I am your host, Matthew Pfeiffer, and today we have on a very special guest. We have Will Guilford from New York. He's all the way in New York, but you guys know that I love people from New York. I used to live there. Hopefully he loves wings as much as I do, and hopefully if he does, he dips his wings in blue cheese the way that we used to do in Western New York. So we will have to check on that as we interview him. But he is someone who, as you guys know, we like interviewing people here on our podcast that we would hire ourselves, that we would recommend to people. And he is someone who deals with high conflict cases, high conflict divorce and divorces of all kinds. And so, Will, thank you very much for joining us. He is with the Guilford Law Group in New York and New York State. And so, Will, thank you very much for joining us. And I'm going to kick it over to you if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Thank you. Well, first of all, Matt, thank you for having me on. It's truly a pleasure to be a part of this this podcast. Here I've gone through quite a few of your podcasts, and I must say they're very informative. You have great guests on, so it's an honor to be a part of that group of guests.
Well, thank you.
Yep, absolutely. So a little background about myself. So I'm originally from Alabama, and I ended up in New York City, because I came up here for law school. I went to NYU School of Law here, and I graduated back in 2005. So I've been practicing attorney for about 17 or so years now. But coming out of law school, I had a job at big law firm. We call it quote unquote big law. And so with big law, you're working for big companies in various capacities. You're handling different clients' needs. Some of the work practice areas that I was involved in was complex civil litigation. There was some mass tort litigation, and then I also had my hand in some white collar criminal defense type work as well when I was at the big law firm. But when you're at the big law firm, you don't really get a full grasp of the full picture of a case. You kind of work on one little aspect of things because they have a big team that specialize in different areas of the case and different aspects of the cases. So you're really not getting the full picture of how litigation works, especially as a young attorney working for a big law firm. And so eventually I decided to jump out and just hang up my own sign and start my own practice. And that was back about 12 years ago. The first client that I got was a divorce client. And this was a lady, I would say she was in her late 50s, probably approaching 60 at the time. The husband was in his late 60s, but he was still working. They had been married. And again, this is 2011. They had been married since around the early to mid 80s. But they had been living apart since the late 80s. So for the most part of their marriage, they were living apart. So this woman came to me. She didn't have much money. And she told me that she had just fired her attorney in her divorce. She said that attorney was trying to get her to accept a settlement that she thought was unfair. So I said, all right, well, let me take a look at what was offered here. So I took a look at it, and at that time I didn't have any experience in divorce. But I took a look at that settlement offer. And I said, yeah, this is unfair. At first glance, I'm looking at it and saying, oh, wow, you'll be waiving your rights to your husband's retirement assets, who she had represented to me at the time were quite substantial. So I said, yeah, that's a problem. So I agreed to take the lady's case. And I immediately came in and we settled that case almost right away and my client got half of the retirement assets that she was supposed to get. Apparently her, and what people, fail to realize, and they can get confused sometimes, is that, the marriage, they have what's called marital property and separate property when it comes to divorce. The court has to decide what's marital and what's separate. So marital property is anything that you obtain marriage, right? Mm-hmm. So the marriage, the duration of the marriage is when you get married until the commencement of the divorce action. So apparently this client's previous attorney was telling her, like, oh, you moved out back in, you know, you moved out back in the late 80s. So you basically were only married for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So you're only entitled, you're not really entitled to this full, you're not really entitled to this full asset. And so I came out and said, that's just wrong. And so we were able to sell that case, and she got half of, you know, the value of the retirement assets from the date of the marriage up till the commencement of that divorce action, which I think was around, commenced around 2009 or 2010. So she got quite a bit of money. She was very happy with the representation. She told the person who referred her to me that she was happy. That person referred more cases to me. Then the network grew and grew, and eventually I became a family law divorce specialist.
17 years later, it's history, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. That's the origin story.
Yeah,
I became a divorce attorney. So there you go.
Do you see that a lot where someone is where someone might even be getting bad advice from an attorney? Like in her case, where someone actually needs to fire their attorney. Is that common practice? You know, and how would someone know, like, if they need to, like, kind of question that attorney? Like, what does that process look like?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say it's common practice for somebody to get such bad advice as she had gotten in that case. No, I wouldn't say it's that common. But there, you know, there are signs. I mean, you kind of have an idea of what the issues are in your case as a client, and you have a general, you know, just as a human being, you know what's fair and what's not fair. So if you see something, if somebody's, you know, for instance, like if there's a retirement asset, if your spouse owns a property, and you know your attorney's telling you that you're not entitled to any portion of that, you should question that. Because even if, oh, you know, some attorneys might tell you, I don't know. And I don't know many attorneys that will tell you this, because it's just not something that's the case. But you know, you may have an attorney that tells you, oh, you're not entitled to that property because it's in your spouse's name only. And that's just not true. And any divorce lawyer who knows anything about divorce law and family law and matrimonial law wouldn't know that. But so if somebody's telling you that you're not entitled to something just because it's in your spouse's only sole name, then you should definitely question that. And you should definitely question any time you're not getting, you know, I would say half of a marital asset, you know, and again, it's not that the law is not that you're supposed to get half of a marital asset. It's that you're supposed to get an equitable amount of a marital asset. But I would, you know, if you're a lay person, I would say just question it. If somebody's saying like, oh, you're not supposed to have, you know, the property, and then, you know, just understand the rationale for that. And then if the rationale makes sense, maybe you can stop there. But if it doesn't make sense, if you still have more questions, I would say go ask a friend, say, hey, do you know anybody who practices divorce law that may be able to answer a question for me? So you can go and do those things as a client. You can go get second opinions, as they say, right? Because if you go to the doctor, if a doctor tells you one thing, you know, that doctor may not be correct. So you might want to go somewhere and get a second opinion. You can do that as well as a client. And, you know, and most attorneys do expect that, you know, that clients may go to outside you know, outside people and get other advice and ask questions. So, you know, that's part of it.
Is there any reason why a lawyer might give bad advice? Is it because they're just not knowledgeable, or is it that sometimes they're trying to settle the case faster? You know, I've worked with people where it has been the case. That's kind of been a situation where I tell them, you know, you might need to get a second opinion on this, and then they get that second opinion, and just like you said, just like your the client that you dealt with, they were way off, and they, you know, they talked to a new attorney, and then they end up letting go of that previous attorney and going through that entire process. But you know, is there any motivational factors, or is it just that person just didn't learn that part of law school, or what have you seen in the field?
Yeah, so I would say first of all, you know, hire an attorney. If you're getting a divorce, hire an attorney that specializes in matrimonial law. Okay. A lot of times people will go to a general practitioner or somebody who does some other area of law, and then that attorney says, oh yeah, I can handle your divorce, and you know, they don't know the domestic relations law, they don't understand the Family Court Act. They don't understand those statutes, and they haven't done the research into the case law. They don't have the experience to know certain things that they that the average divorce attorney would know. You know, and there's plenty of questions that you can ask to potential attorneys that can get you to that understanding and find out if that attorney, you know, knows what they're doing and is somebody that can handle your case.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that that happens, and I'm sure you've seen, I'm sure you've dealt with it with as much experience as that you've had, is there's a lot of people who kind of have a false perception of the type of divorce that they're about to deal with. I've worked with a lot of people. They just have this perception that their divorce is going to be very easy. And then it's like, you know, you start talking to them and it's like, now this is going to be high conflict. And then I've also worked with a lot of people who they assume that it's going to be high conflict, but then they end up settling and it ends up being pretty fair both ways. How would someone kind of be able to tell, or maybe it's a conversation that they need to have with their attorney on whether or not this and that, yeah, this is a good chance that this is going to need to be litigated versus this is something that we probably could settle this outside of court.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So generally speaking, you know, cases involving custody, do you have kids involved, and there's an issue as to who's going to get custody and what type of custody, what type of visitation is going to happen, then you might have a drawn out litigation, and you will know right from the start whether or not the case is going to be drawn out in any type of way because you got a custody battle on your hand.
Yeah.
But other cases, cases that involve spouses hiding assets, those are the other types of cases that, you know, one might not know right away, you know, whether or not there's going to be a conflict there. But eventually stuff comes out. And so when we start a divorce case, we file what's called the Statement of Net Worth. All right. The Statement of Net Worth is approximately 27 page document that lays out the entire financial picture of both the parties. And both the husband and the wife are required to file these documents with the court and to exchange them with the other party. So that is done under penalties of perjury. So you're swearing to this document that everything in that document is true. So you have to lay out your full financial circumstances, all your bank accounts, all your credit card accounts, all those things. So you get a listing. So as attorneys, we get a listing of all of these accounts. And then we ask for the statements for these accounts. Once we get the statements, then we can start seeing if there's anything that's been hidden, if there's any hidden income. And then once you get to hidden income, and you know, you're going to have an issue, and you're probably going to have a more drawn out litigation because, you know, the fact that the person was hiding the income in the first place already tells you that that person doesn't want to split that asset.
Right.
Okay. So then, you know, you have fights over a lot of things. And in New York, just so you know, we went from being a fault-based divorce system back in around 2010 to now there's a grounds for divorce. You can get married based on irreconcilable differences or irretrievable breakdown of the marriage is what it's called. So it's called a no-fault divorce. You can get that now. So generally speaking, all these issues of infidelity and things of that nature, they don't come into a divorce as much these days. But I still tell my clients there's a way to get, evidence and information about infidelity and a spouse's extramarital affairs in, and that's when it comes to what's called marital waste. Okay.
Yeah.
And marital waste is kind of a way, if say, for instance, if you don't, you know, is a way to get a credit for certain expenses that your spouse might have wasted during the marriage.
Yeah.
So for instance, if that spouse had an affair and was taking the mistress on luxury vacations, buying luxury items on this, that's all discoverable, and that'll all come out in litigation, and we can tabulate that, and we can find out how much this person spent on this extra marital relationship. And, you know, if it's $50,000, we'll deduct that, you know, for whatever they may have been entitled to, you know, for the investment property that the couple owns together. So there's ways to get stuff like that in, and when you start dealing with that, that makes the that can make the divorce messy, as you obviously can imagine. So, yeah,
it sounds like it definitely sounds like it get pretty messy. And how would someone know? Obviously, they would know that that person is cheating. But what type of like evidence or what type of documentation would you recommend for someone who might feel like that might be the case?
Well, you text messages are one way to get things in. Text messages, you have potential. Well, I'll say this again. Infidelity really comes into play when there's fault-based grounds for divorce. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's claiming adultery and they want to litigate that, then, you know, we'll bring in evidence of infidelity. But generally speaking, the way we bring in infidelity now is to bring in our marital waste arguments. And again, that comes in, and like I said, that comes in the form of evidence of, you know, what you spent on this affair. So first you would prove that there was an affair here. You'd bring text messages, you'd have text messages, you'd have emails potentially, you'd have pictures, you'd have trips, you'd have receipts for vacations. You're going to ask this person about these things, who they went on this trip with. You may even depose the alleged mistress and get the testimony of that person. And that can also be used as evidence as trial as well. So you basically get a confession from the mistress that, yes, I was having an affair here. And that's probably the easiest way to prove the infidelity. And then from there, you make the argument that, you know, this is what the spouse spent on that relationship. So.
To ask this question, because I know that some people are dealing with habitual cheaters, and so can that add up? Like if someone has multiple different mistresses or mistresses that they're dealing with, and I'm assuming that, or let me ask you this way: have you dealt with that? Have you had a case where they got retroactive pay for multiple different affairs that they had, multiple different trips with, you know, three different men, three different women? You know, is that something that happens? Is that something that the court would look at or honor? Or do they kind of say like, no, let's only look at the main one or the main focus?
No, the court looks at all that, and especially when it comes to marital waste arguments. So when marital waste argument, look, whatever you're spending that's not beneficial to the marriage or to the spouse, you can make your marital waste claim there. And so if you got a spouse who's had several affairs, you can bring all evidence of all that stuff in. And we talk about affairs is just one way to prove marital waste, to show marital waste. You can show marital waste through gambling. A spouse who spends a lot of money in Las Vegas, for instance, that's marital waste. Wasting money gambling, that is marital waste. Failed businesses sometimes can be considered marital waste as well. So,
but drug addiction.
Drug addiction can be as well, too. Yes, mm-hmm. If you're spending money on a drug habit, alcohol habit, that can be a marital waste.
I'm going to throw out a couple of frequent flyers. What about like massages, where they're getting massages, but you know, happy endings and that sort of thing. Heard a lot of like hookers and things of that nature. Is that all of those things are all included?
100%, absolutely. Yes, you're spending money on prostitutes, or like you said, massages that add up to something else. Then yes, absolutely. That's all wasteful dissipation of marital assets. Absolutely.
One of the things I like to ask attorney. I always tell people that attorneys give some of the best relationship advice. Mainly because you're looking at things from the end and kind of able to reverse engineer some of those things. How would someone going into a relationship or going into a marriage kind of avoid some of these pitfalls with, you know, because obviously it's very attractive to be with someone who is a high net worth individual. But at the same time, that at times can be very that at times can come at a cost like this, because they can afford a lifestyle to kind of hide and tuck away assets. They can hide, you know, and tuck away affairs and that sort of thing. How would you say that you, how would someone, what would you recommend to, you know, avoid ending up with someone like this, or to protect yourself if you end up in a situation like this, you know, kind of on both ends?
All right. That's a good question. And I'll just, you know, answer it and just give you several different pieces of advice. But first, the first thing is, you know, and this is dealing with data. So the data shows that the younger you get married, the more likely you are going to get a divorce. Yeah, absolutely. And so it looks like this. So people who get married under the age of 25, they're more likely to get divorced than people who get married between the ages of 25 and 35.
Mm-hmm.
The older you get, then after 35, the older you get, the less the chances are you're going to get divorced. And so that could, you know, there could be many reasons for that. And some of that may be common sense type of reasons. Obviously, you haven't been through life. You haven't, you know, there's a lot you haven't seen and done before 25. So you're going to regret, you know, have regrets.
Well, I know from a therapist perspective, your blunt brain is even fully functional until after 25 too. And then obviously you don't even know what your career is going to be. I mean, typically, you know, before the age of 25, you've changed your career, at least in college, you've changed your major at least, you know, 9 different times on average. So, you know, I can imagine, you know, getting married at a young age and, you know, realizing that you married someone that's not even, that you're not no longer compatible with as you mature.
Absolutely. And I think you just alluded to a good point there. We change as we grow. And that person, if you get married at 21, 22, when you're 35, that's not going to be the same person that you married at 21 or 22. So, you know, that's just one thing to think about. Like, you know, give yourself time. You know, people should give themselves time to get married. Don't jump into it. And if you look at the divorce now, the divorce rate is going down but the marriage rate is also going down. So less people are getting married, but less people are also getting divorced. And I think that's because people are being more careful about who they choose to partner with now. And they're taking that, you know, they're taking their, and then when they do partner with somebody, they're taking the vows a little bit more seriously. Now, the divorce rate is still about, I think, people who get married for the first time, they get divorced on average about 45% to 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. So they're going to. Their relationship may end up in the divorce about 45-50. That's a high percentage, yeah. I think. And obviously, and then it goes up. People in second marriages, I think they get divorced. Their relationship ends up in divorce about 63% of the time. And then when you get a third marriage, you're going to divorce about 73% of the time or something like that. Anyway, the divorce rate can be high. It's going down a little bit. I'd say just be careful about who you marry. And you know, take your time in thinking about, you know, who you're partnering with before you actually partner with them. That's common sense type thing. And the second thing, and you know, what's become very popular nowadays is prenups, right? I think prenups are very helpful in relationships, because a lot of people do have financial, financial issues are a big part of, you know, the reason why people get divorced.
Yeah.
So when you do a prenup, you set boundaries,
yeah.
With a prenup, you set clear expectations. There's a clear demarcation of what is considered marital mm-hmm. property and what's considered your separate property with the prenup. So I think having those things in place can save your relationship too. And the way I look at marriage is a business relationship. It's an interesting type of relationship. So it's a business relationship, but it involves love, it involves intimacy, and that just adds an extra layer of volatility potentially if you don't set things up and have the right expectations going into that relationship. Because, I mean, if you see with any business relationships, a lot of business relationships fall out because the people didn't set up the right formalities for their relationship going into it. So just, you know, a prenup is very helpful. And I think everybody, every couple should have a prenup. I think that would be the ideal world we live in. But those are tough conversations to have sometimes.
But we need, but if you think about it, I mean, you bring up a good point that it's a tough conversation. But if you can't have a tough conversation going into the marriage, I mean, a lot of the marriage is going to be, if you can't have a tough conversation before, how are you going to have difficult conversations during the marriage? One of the things I tell people is that, you know, all the true test of any relationship isn't when things are going good, the trips, the vacation, sex, all that. Anybody can be do that and do it when it's good. But can you do it when it's difficult? Like, and that's the true, like, when you're having conflict, how, you know, is it, you know, are people going to be able to be reasonable, or, you know, is there going to be this big, huge falling out? And so having that discussion early, you know, definitely you're going to be able to see that person. But one of the things I wanted to touch on, I think there's a big misconception, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but at least from things, from times I've heard or anytime I've posted about prenups, there's a big misconception that it means that if I sign a prenup, especially the person who may not have as many assets or may not be as financially attuned as the other partner, that they're going to lose out, that that means that the other person gets nothing. And that's something that's just not true. I know at least Michael Jordan actually has a prenup that's written in a way that it's tiered. So if they're married for, let's say, 2 years, then she gets, let's just say, this is just as an example, she gets $1 million. But, you know, if they're married for 5 years, then it goes up to $5 million, and it's tiered, you know, and the longer that they're together, the more that she makes, you know, in the event of a divorce. And then obviously if the marriage ends in death, then there's also another tier that she would get. And so can you talk to a little bit about that? Is there a myth behind, you know, or a stereotype behind prenups? And is it very common to have a tier like that? And is that something that you would advise to?
Yeah. So first of all, you can't negotiate away child support rights, right? So if you can't, that can't be a part of it. And that's, there's a misconception about that as well. I think, you know, people think you can, you know, put that in a prenup. You can't. There's no, you know, child support is going to be what it's going to be no matter what. So if you're the custodial parent, you're going to be entitled to whatever the child support guidelines or whatever the court decides that you're entitled to. And there's nothing you can put in the agreement to change that. Okay, so that's first. Now everything else, and except spousal maintenance, which is also called alimony in other states, you know, is enforceable to the degree. So you can put in whatever you want in that prenup, and for the most part, the courts, unless the court find any reason to overturn the legal validity of the contract, they're going to uphold that agreement. So you can do it tiered, like you said, where, you know, she would be in, you know, the spouse would be entitled to, you know, a certain amount based on the number of years that are married. And I take it that you're talking about for alimony or spousal maintenance purposes. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another, and I'll touch on spousal maintenance real quick. So in New York, we call what a lot of other states call alimony. We call it spousal maintenance. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing that you can negotiate and you can put that in the agreement, but if the court, like, so for instance, the court, if the court finds that the spouse that doesn't have money would have to apply for public benefits or welfare, they would order that the other spouse with money pay that spouse maintenance. You can waive away your rights to spousal maintenance in your thing. So Michael Jordan could have negotiated with her that she doesn't have any right to maintenance. Mm-hmm. And that would be enforceable if they were to get a divorce, assuming that, you know, she's not going to have to apply for welfare or get on food stamps or anything like that. Then the court would be like, OK, you know what? We're not, instead of the government paying her, you're going to have to pay her, Michael Jordan, with your billions of dollars. So they wouldn't allow him to get away with that. But yeah, the way they set it up, I mean, that's a normal thing to do, is people have tiers, especially when you're talking about somebody with money like Michael Jordan. But a lot of people, they waive their rights to spousal maintenance in their agreements, especially if the people make about the same amount. Because generally speaking, I mean, that's the way the law is going to work too. If you get divorced, neither one of you is going to get spousal maintenance. if you make roughly the same amount. So, but yeah, there's a misconception that you're not going to get anything, because I would say that in every agreement, there's some delineation of what's marital property and what's separate property. Okay. And you usually put that in there. So whatever you deem to be marital property and whatever the percentage of that marital property that you deem the other spouse to get, they're going to get in the agreement. But again, you can put whatever you want in there and it's going to be enforceable, assuming that, you know, there's no issues with the legal validity of the agreement and negotiation process that was.
Well, Will, you have been a treasure. It's been an honor to have you. You have a wealth of knowledge, and it's been great having you. You have a lot of wisdom, obviously, a lot of experience with all of these difficult dealings, you know. And so, hopefully, people who are listening have learned a lot. I know I've learned a lot today. So, tell people a couple of different things. Number one, if you like wings, and how do you order them? You like them? You like dipping them in blue cheese or ranch? We're a blue cheese family over here, so we're always curious about that. But then also, where can people find you if they want to connect with you, if they want to follow you, if they want to support you, or if they want to refer you out to family members who might be in New York?
Well, first of all, I'm a big guy, so I like to eat. Period. But I definitely like my wings. I love wings, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, Matt, but I like ranch.
Oh,
but
man.
I also like blue cheese. I love blue cheese. It depends on the day. Mm-hmm. It can either be ranch or blue cheese for me. But yeah, either one is good business. So yeah, no, everybody can find me at I have Instagram at Guilford Law Group. Same on LinkedIn, Guilford Law Group as well. Facebook, Guilford Law Group. It's there. You can look me up. I do post content. And I do post informational articles on my social media. Yeah, thank you, Matt, for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been a real honor to talk to you. And thank you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. For those of you who are listening, make sure you guys go to Ruth. Edit that out whenever you get a chance. For those of you who are listening, doesn't matter where you're listening. If you're watching this on YouTube or if you're listening on your favorite podcast channel, make sure you guys go down to the comment section. Let Will and I know something that you may have learned from today's episode. You can also go directly to him and comment on all of his social medias and let him know that you are very thankful for the things that he has provided, for the information that he's provided, or something that you've learned as well. With all that being said, you can also go to the show notes if you need to connect with him. All of his information will be down below. And thank you guys very much for participating, for listening. With all that being said, we will see you in the next episode. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful day. So I say, hold on.